Afternoon. It's good to see all those who are willing and able to come back this afternoon to study another portion of God's Word. Dan's still doing his horror night duty, so he wasn't able to come back this afternoon. I'd like to talk a little bit this afternoon about the fifth chapter of the Gospel of Mark. Last week we studied the fourth chapter. This week we're going to look at the fifth chapter a little bit, and there's kind of broken into three different sections, this particular chapter of Mark's Gospel, and it talks about three different times that Jesus healed someone in various ways. And Mark's is a little more detailed than some of the other Gospels, and these stories are not unique to Mark, but he gives a little more insight into them. And so we're going to look at each one of these and try to gain a little bit deeper understanding of what the Bible is teaching us, because as Brother Dennis brought out so well this morning, we're here to find out the truth. We want to know what the Bible teaches, and the only way we're going to do that is if we dig into it and really study it and gain a deeper understanding of what it has to teach us. So I'd like to begin this afternoon by reading the first 20 verses of Mark chapter 5. I'll be reading from the King James translation. And they came over into the other side of the sea, into the country of the Gadarenes. And when he was come out of the ship, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among the tombs, and no man could bind him, no, not with chains, because that he had been often bound with fetters and chains, and the chains had been plucked asunder by him, and the fetters broken in pieces, neither could any man tame him. And always night and day he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying and cutting himself with stones. But when he saw Jesus afar off, he ran and worshipped him, and cried with a loud voice, and said, What have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of the Most High God? I adjure thee by God that thou torment me not. For he said unto him, Come out of the man, thou unclean spirit. And he asked him, What is thy name? And he answered, saying, My name is Legion, for we are many. And he besought him much that he would not send them away out of the country. Now there was there nigh unto the mountains a great herd of swine feeding, and all the devils besought him, saying, Send us into the swine, that we may enter into them. And forthwith Jesus gave them leave. And the unclean spirits went out and entered into the swine, and the herd ran violently down a steep place into the sea, there were about 2,000, and were choked in the sea. And they that fed the swine fled and told it in the city and in the country. And they went out to see what it was that was done. And they came to Jesus and see him that was possessed with the devil and had the legion sitting and clothed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. And they that saw it told them how it befell him to him that was possessed with the devil and also concerning the swine. And they began to pray him to depart out of their coast. And when he was coming to the ship, he that had been possessed with the devil prayed him that he might be with him. Howbeit Jesus suffered him not, but saith unto him, Go home to thy friends, and tell them how great things the Lord hath done for thee, and hath had compassion on thee. And he departed and began to publish in Decapolis how great things Jesus had done for him, and all men did marvel. So we see as Jesus kind of takes these trips back and forth across the Sea of Galilee to the different places where he is teaching. He returns to the, I believe he's on the west coast now, of the Sea of Galilee. And the place where the ship lands is near some mountains. And in those mountains is where the Jews of that area have been burying their dead. Just as Jesus was buried in a tomb and Lazarus was buried in a tomb, this was kind of a common burial practice for the Jews at that time. They kind of had places set aside outside the city, because when you go back and look at the Old Testament, you see all the rituals that they had to do to purify themselves after they had touched a dead body, a dead human body, or a dead animal. This was considered unclean. And so they had this area set aside for their burial. And here is this man living there who he's possessed by many demons. And when he sees Jesus and the apostles coming, he recognizes Jesus. Now, we see several accounts in the Gospels where Jesus confronts people who are possessed with an evil spirit, and these evil spirits recognize Jesus. Even though Jesus is not in his heavenly form, he's come to earth and he lives in the form of a man, but they recognize him for who he is. And Jesus often tells them, you know, don't use my name, because Jesus didn't want anybody getting the wrong idea that these demons knew them, because they were kind of in cahoots with each other, I think is the word I'm looking for. And Jesus did not want people to think in any way that he associated with these demons, but they did know him. Now, we know that there was a war in heaven, and many of the angels that sided with Lucifer in that battle or in that confrontation were cast out of heaven. And as it appears in the time of Jesus, some of these people have, some of these evil or these cast out angels have possessed people. We see a lot of stuff in entertainment today about demon possession. And as I've mentioned before, the devil and that kind of thing is more popular at the box office than Jesus or good things. So there's a lot of movies made about it, a lot of stories told about demon possession. We don't really believe that that takes place today, because no one has the power to exorcise those demons. Certainly Satan's influence is found in the evil things that are said and done throughout this country and throughout the world, but it's not the same as it was then. So this man comes and he comes up to Jesus, and it's interesting that even though this is a man that's possessed by evil spirits, he still bows down to Jesus. He recognizes that Jesus is the Son of God, and he realizes that Jesus has the power to destroy them, plural, because there were more than one there. And so he comes to Jesus and asks him, you know, what are you doing here? Why have you come to bother me? Now, this man has obviously been through a great deal of physical and mental anguish. It says that they've tied him up on several occasions to try to keep him from cutting himself. Obviously, he's taking stones and cutting his skin. This is a practice that we see sometimes today by people who are mentally troubled. They'll cut themselves with knives or glass or whatever they can get their hands on as some way of relieving the anguish that they feel. But this man has obviously been through a lot. It doesn't mention it here in Mark, but I think it's in Matthew, mentions the fact that he's naked. So here's this man running around in the tombs. He's up there with the dead bodies. Some historians speculate that this man might have been a Gentile. Others that think he was a Jew, again, that it would be a situation much like the prodigal son, where in his despair and his desperation, the prodigal son actually took a job feeding the swine. And as a Jew, the Jews were to have nothing to do with pigs or swine. They were considered unclean. They weren't supposed to keep them as livestock or have anything to do with them. And so just as a prodigal had kind of resorted to that low, so to speak, to survive, this man, if he was a Jew, is hanging out in a place of dead bodies where he really shouldn't be. Regardless of his nationality, he's somebody that needs help. And Jesus is determined to help him. And so when he asked, "What is thy name?" he was trying to reach like the man that the demons had possessed. But the demons tell him that their name is Legion. Now, a Roman legion consisted of 6,000 and I think it's 142, if I remember right, soldiers made up a Roman legion. So when the demon referred to himself as Legion, what he's saying is there's a multiplicity of demons that are inside the man. And we see that when they go into the swine, there's 2,000 of the pigs, and they go in and all the pigs run into the sea and drown themselves because they're smart enough to get an evil spirit out of them when people are not as smart to resist that. But we see that Jesus, when he asked their name, he said they are Legion, and they didn't want to leave that area. And again, this is something that seems kind of different to us, and it's like these are disembodied spirits that have to possess a living person in order to to function and do anything, but they were comfortable where they were at. They didn't want to be sent to the abyss of hell, and they didn't want to be sent away from where they were at. So they asked Jesus if they could go into the swine, and Jesus allowed them to do that. And some people might ask, well, why? I mean, those animals belong to someone. Why would Jesus allow the demons to go into those animals and then be destroyed? And it's likely that it was because the people that owned these pigs were Jews. And again, this is something that they weren't supposed to do, but they were Jews that weren't practicing correctly. And so Jesus is trying to teach a multiplicity of things by this one action. And it's like, so when the demons go into the pigs, they run down, as we said, into the sea, and it says they were choked or they drowned. And of course, the people that kept the swine at this time and saw the things that were going on were pretty terrified about what happened, so they ran into the city. So all these people come out, and they pray or they beg Jesus to leave. They're frightened by what they've seen. And again, if they're those who are not practicing Judaism properly, they're probably spiritually afraid as well as physically afraid of someone that has the power and ability that Jesus did. And so Jesus has cured this man. The demons are gone. When the people of the town come out, it says that the man is sitting there. He's no longer running around. He's no longer howling like a wild animal. He's calm. He's sitting at the feet of Jesus. He's clothed. He's in his right mind. And this is no doubt something that was very unsettling to the people that lived there. Sometimes I think it's hard for us to go back and imagine what these kind of things were like and what kind of reaction that we would have to if we were there. And it's hard to find anything really in life today that we can compare it to, because we don't have the miracles today that Jesus was allowed to perform to show his authority from God. And so it's kind of hard for us to really relate to that, but this must have been something just unheard of. And so the people kind of marveled, and again, they were awed by it, but at the same time, they were afraid of what Jesus had the potential to do to them if he could exercise these demons the way that he did. And so something else that's kind of interesting about this particular part of this chapter is the demons made a request of Jesus, and Jesus honored their request. But now the man that was possessed asked Jesus if he can go with him, and Jesus tells him no. He wants him to stay home. He said, go home to thy friends and tell them about the great things the Lord hath done for you. And those that had compassion on him in the past and tried to help him, he needs to go back and kind of reconcile himself to them. And he can be a better vessel for spreading the gospel and telling more people about Jesus in his home than he could if he went with Jesus to the other places that he was going to travel. And of course, we can make an illustration for people today. Sometimes there are people in the church who want to go into foreign fields and help people and build congregations in countries or areas of even our country where there are no congregations. There are people that have a talent for that and an ability for that, and if that's what, and they have that ability and they have that desire, then they certainly should be supported in doing that. But it also shows the importance of having people in the home congregation who can teach and who can build up the church locally. The church needs all people of all different talents and abilities. Because some work requires a person with a different demeanor and a different way of handling things than others. And so Jesus here is showing that it's important for this person, instead of going with him, to stay there so that people can see him, to see that he's been healed, that he's no longer a lunatic running naked through the mountains, but he's someone who has his wits about him now. And it's something that in those days, a miracle is the only thing that could really explain what had happened to him. That's not like there were drugs or anything, therapy that we have today that can try to help people get over their mental problems. This is a miraculous healing, and Jesus wanted to make sure that the people there knew about it. And again, along with that, this idea that there were probably a lot of Jews in that area who were not practicing Judaism properly, and a lot of pagans as well. And so again, this is something that Jesus wanted that person to just stay there and be a positive influence and a sign of that the Messiah had come. I'd like now to continue reading with verse 21. Now when Jesus was passed over again by ship unto the other side, much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea. And behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet, and besought him greatly, saying, My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed, and she shall live. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him and thronged him. And a certain woman, which had an issue of blood 12 years, and had suffered many things of many physicians, and had spent all she had, and was nothing better, but rather grew worse, when she had heard of Jesus, came in the press behind and touched his garment. For she said, If I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. And straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that virtue had gone out of him, turned him about in the press and said, Who touched my clothes? And his disciples said unto him, Thou seest the multitude thronging thee, and sayest thou, Who touched me? And he looked around about to see her that had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. And he said unto her, Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace and be whole of thy plague. So here we see a situation where Jesus had gone back across the Sea of Galilee again, and people had gathered. And when he got out of the boat, there was a man named Jairus, who was one of the rulers of the synagogue in that place, had come to him and asked him to come and to see about his daughter, that she had, that she was sick to the point of death. And so he wanted Jesus to come. No doubt he had heard about the healing power of Jesus. And as we know from studying the Gospels, many of the scribes and Pharisees and the leaders of the synagogues where Jesus went did not believe that Jesus was the Messiah. They tried to accuse him of blasphemy and everything else. And this kind of this man kind of coming to Jesus and asking for help is kind of what we see in a lot of people today. I'm sure all of us at one time or another have known somebody who was not particularly spiritual or religious, but as soon as something goes wrong, someone gets sick or someone's in an accident, they want to start praying and talking to God, like all of a sudden now they need God. They don't accept the fact that they need God 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They only want to need God when they're in trouble, and then they get frustrated and upset if things don't work out. They feel like God hasn't done what they thought he should for them. And so this man, by coming forward, is kind of going against the grain of his fellow Jews, his leaders of the synagogue and the scribes and Pharisees, and accepting that Jesus can help him. Perhaps he's doing it out of desperation, but there must be some belief in him that Jesus can do his reputation said he could, or he would not have done that. He wouldn't have put himself in a position where he would have looked bad in the eyes of his contemporaries by seeking out Jesus if he didn't really think that he could heal her. So as Jesus is on the way to the house of Jairus, we see that he's going through another crowd of people. This is something that as Jesus' fame grew, no doubt he had to deal with quite a bit. We know John's gospel tells us that there's not enough books in the world to hold all the things that Jesus said and did while he was here upon the earth. And no doubt as his popularity grew, or his fame and the things that people were saying about him would cause a great deal of curiosity. Again, it's kind of hard to, one of the things that some of the older people here might relate to is kind of the reaction that people had to the Beatles. It sounds kind of strange, but if you go back and look at footage of when the Beatles first came to America, these girls are crying and screaming and going crazy. And this is kind of the reaction that Jesus was getting from a lot of people, because this is something they'd never seen or experienced before. And the things that Jesus could do, I'm not sure that all of the people were convinced that he was the Messiah, but they knew that he could do something that nobody else could do. And so they were seeking him out for physical healing and not as much for the spiritual teachings that he came to bring. And so we see this is the case here where he's trying to get to the house of Jairus. He's having to go through a crowd of people, and it's gotten to the point where it's almost like they can't move. They're surrounded by people and are trying to get through the crowd. This woman reaches out and touches Jesus, and her faith caused her to be healed. And Jesus asked, you know, who was it that touched me? Because he wanted to make sure that this woman understood where his power came from. There's a lot of people at this time believed in the occult and magic. If we remember for the Old Testament, this is something that God condemned, was astrology and witchcraft and things of this nature. But there were a lot of people that believed in this kind of thing at that time. This woman had had this illness for 12 years. It said that she had seen many different physicians. She had gone through many as many treatments, I guess, as they had in those days for this issue of blood that she had. So much so that she had kind of burned through all the money that she had, and she had little options left. So perhaps she thought, if I can touch this man, I'll be healed. But he wanted to make sure that she understood that his authority came from God, is why that she was able to be healed. So when he called and asked who it was, she came forward, and Jesus told her that it was her faith that had healed her. It wasn't any kind of magic power that Jesus had or anything like this. He wanted her to understand that that she believed that by touching Jesus, she could be healed. And it was her faith that had healed her. We'll continue now to reading the rest of the chapter, beginning in verse 35. While he yet spake, there came from the ruler of the synagogue's house certain which said, "Thy daughter is dead. Why troublest thou the master any further?" As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he saith unto the ruler of the synagogue, "Be not afraid, only believe." And he suffered no man to follow him, save Peter and James and John, the brother of James. And he cometh to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and seeth the tumult, and them that wept and wailed greatly. And when he was come in, he saith unto them, "Why make ye this ado and weep? The damsel is not dead, but sleepeth." And they laughed him to scorn. But when he had put them out, all out, he taketh the father and the mother of the damsel, and them that were with him, and entereth in where the damsel was lying. And he took the damsel by the hand, and said unto her, "Talitha kumi," which is, being interpreted, "Damsel, I say unto thee, arise." And straightway the damsel arose and walked, for she was of the age of 12 years. And they were astonished with a great astonishment, and he charged them straightly that no man should know it, and commanded that something should be given to her to eat. So this is kind of a similar situation to what we see when Jesus was told that Lazarus was sick. When people came and told Jesus that Lazarus was ill, he didn't leave right away to go see Lazarus, because he knew that he was going to die, and that Jesus was going to raise him from the dead, again to show the authority that he had from God. So in this situation with this woman, he stopped, and there's it takes an amount of time to go through that situation and get that resolved. So when that's taken care of, we see that people have come from the synagogue and told Jairus that his daughter is now dead. So don't bother Jesus anymore. There's nothing he can do for you. Your daughter is gone. And so Jesus told him, don't be afraid, but believe. And so then he kind of dismissed everybody else and got them to go away. And he, along with Peter, James, and John, went to the house of Jairus. When they get there, it says that there's there's a crowd of people that are wailing and moaning. These were actually people that they were paid mourners. It's like their job was to go around to people's homes that someone had died and to make kind of a bigger spectacle of the thing than it really was by wailing and crying like they had lost a loved one, and it's just a kind of a, it was more or less like a big show. And so Jesus was asking him, "What are you doing here? This girl's not dead. She's just asleep." And they made fun of Jesus. This kind of showed that they weren't really upset, or if they had any kind of stake in this little girl's life, and they thought that Jesus could heal her, they wouldn't have scorned him. They would have encouraged him to go and help her. But they were just they made light of the things that Jesus said. And so once Jesus got all them out of the house, he, along with the father and mother and Peter, James, and John, went up to the damsel's room. It's kind of interesting that Mark makes a notation of this, that these three apostles went with Jesus. This wouldn't be the last time that he would pick these three men to go with him where the other apostles or disciples didn't follow. We know when Jesus went up to the Mount of Transfiguration, Peter, James, and John went with him. When Jesus went into the garden to pray before he was arrested, again, it was Peter, James, and John that went a little farther distance with him. He left some of the apostles at a certain place, and they walked farther with Jesus before they stopped, and then Jesus went into the garden to pray. So these were kind of like his top lieutenants, if you want to look at it that way, of the apostles. Peter being the outspoken one, James and John also quite outspoken. Jesus called them Barragenes, or the sons of thunder. These were men that were very dedicated to Jesus, and so he wanted them to be along to see what was going to transpire. So he went into the little girl's room. He took her by the hand and told her to get up, and she came back to life and arose and walked, and she was fine and in good health. It's kind of curious here. Think back to the beginning of the chapter when Jesus exorcised the demons from the man. He told him he wanted him to go and tell everybody what Jesus had done for him. But in this particular case, Jesus tells the parents, "I don't want you to tell anybody what happened." In other words, you know, your daughter was sick. He went and looked at her. She's better. He didn't really want them going around and spreading around the idea that he could raise people from the dead, because, again, this would draw people to Jesus for the wrong reason. They would be coming to him for miraculous healing. If they had a relative that had recently, or a friend had recently died, they'd be trying to drag Jesus to where that body was to be resurrected. And it was important that he had that authority from God to show that he was from God and that he had that power from God, but he couldn't let it get out of control to the point where that's all people really cared about. And we can kind of see that in society today, how when somebody becomes popular, as an athlete or an actor or actress or a musician, they become popular and people begin to follow after them and pattern their lives after them. And then when these people have a fall from grace, it's kind of sad to see the people that looked at them as role models, how they began to feel about that. And so the thing that Jesus wanted to do was he just wanted to spread the gospel. And this was a power that he needed to do that, but he didn't want it to get out of control and out of hand. So that's why he would tell people in certain situations, don't go spreading this around. But other times, if you'll remember, I think it's in Luke, the 10 men that come to Jesus that are lepers, 9 of them are Jews and 1 of them is a Samaritan. And the Samaritan's the only one who came back and thanked Jesus. But Jesus told them specifically, go down to the temple and show yourself to the priest, because the priests were the ones who could declare somebody clean if they weren't a leper, or they could say that they were a leper. And, of course, then that person would be cast out of the city and they'd have to go to the leper colony to live. And so every time Jesus does this, when he gives a command for someone to tell people or not to tell them, it's for a very specific reason, and that's to make sure that he can continue in the short time that he has upon the earth to teach, to expose the gospel to as many people as he possibly can. So that brings us to the conclusion of this chapter. Hopefully something was of interest here that will cause us to go and read more about these situations, and it's always good to pick up commentaries too and get a deeper insight into things like just the environment, like the tombs, what was that really all about? Because the more you understand the situation and the environment that it was presented in, the deeper an understanding we get of what Jesus was, his mission was all about, the truth, as Dennis brought out this morning. But it kind of helps us understand why one time Jesus would do one thing and one time he would do something else. It was very, very specific, and we can understand the specifics of that when we learn more about it. We never want to miss an opportunity to offer services to the church when we gather together to those who might want to come forward while we stand and sing the invitation song.